You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Called it. Welcome in to a special breaking news episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Saturday afternoon, the Rockets are just a few hours away from finally returning to the court after a couple of off days since that brutal overtime loss to the Brooklyn Nets on Wednesday night, 145-142. Rockets getting back into action later tonight against the LA Lakers, the ABC primetime game, the first of those. But the breaking news happening before the game, courtesy of Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, who broke it late Friday night, that the Rockets and former Brooklyn big man Kenneth Faried, yes, a guy who was at the end of the bench during everything that happened with the Nets and Rockets late Wednesday night, he secured his buyout from the Nets. And he is making his way to the Rockets once he clears waivers at about 4 p.m. Central Time on Monday afternoon. And if you've been a listener to me here at Locked On Rockets, it's a name that we've been discussing, Kenneth Faried, 29 years old, 6'8", 220 pounds, for quite some time now, really after the Milwaukee loss last week when the Rockets thought Nene was unplayable and they didn't have another option up front other than Nene that they trusted. And at 36 years old, the Rockets didn't think that he was a good fit for the switching, the athleticism required against a team as long and athletic as the Bucks. That's where, even before Clint Capela's injury, Faried, of the potentially available bigs, made the most sense for me. It was just about when the timing would work out for him to get his buyout from Brooklyn. And as happens in a lot of these cases, I think the timing of the buyout, just like Tyson Chandler with the Suns going to the Lakers earlier this year, just came to when Faried and his agent made the request. And in my opinion, after losing Clint Capela, that opening up even a bigger role potentially for Faried, and then the Rockets, ironically, against Faried's former team, the Nets, blowing that game on Wednesday night, that was the perfect storm in which both sides, Kenneth Faried and the Rockets, realized this was a fit that was to the benefit of both parties. So in Saturday's show, what we're going to break down is first why Faried makes sense for the Rockets, then we're going to look at why the Rockets make sense for Faried, and then the third and final segment, we'll discuss how the Rockets create the roster spot needed, potentially waiving either Carmelo Anthony or trading potentially James Nunnally, who's on his 10-day contract. There's lots of options the Rockets could go, but ultimately, how do they create the roster spot on Monday once Faried officially claims waivers? And for starters, I do want to stress that even though technically he is not a free agent yet, because of that, the Rockets do not have his rights, so they can't comment on him as though he's their player yet, even though there's an agreement in place. The Rockets have to wait until he is formally their player before they can address him as though he's part of the team. So no, the Rockets aren't going to be able to say much about it tonight, other than at least he'll be a free agent at that point once he officially goes on the waiver wire as of 4 p.m. But there's no risk because he makes nearly $14 million, and there is no team, even if they wanted to claim Kenneth Faried, there is no team with the cap room to do it. So it's just a matter of when, not if, that he clears waivers. And at this point, a deal that's been reported both nationally, Adrian Wojnarowski, locally with Mark Berman and Jonathan Fagan, it is going to happen. Kenneth Faried is going to join the Rockets. And fortunately, he'll do so by Monday night's game against the Sixers, a pretty big team with Joel Embiid. Then later in the week, you have the Toronto Raptors. That's a couple of very good, larger teams that the current iteration, with basically Gary Clark having to play 25 to 30 small ball minutes at the five, Nene limited to about 15 minutes per game, that's just untenable without Clint Capela. And it's his absence that made Faried go from a pretty good fit for the Rockets to, in my opinion, almost a necessity, to where fortunately both sides were willing to hammer it out. And in the case of Faried, show enough urgency to get his buyout in mid-January rather than waiting until the typical point, which is after the trade deadline in early February. Also, kudos to the Nets for doing right by their player. They could have said, well, we want to keep you just to see if we can trade you at the trade deadline. But ultimately, as I said in our first show a week ago examining the possibility, I never saw a Faried trade as likely, because for the Nets, a team in their shoes, they want cap flexibility. Well, if Fareed makes sense for someone, they're probably not going to have $15 million or close to it in expiring salaries to send Brooklyn's way. And if they're taking back longer-term contracts, that doesn't make any sense. So the odds of a Fareed trade were never all that high. Some teams would still, in my opinion, hold out hope for the 1% chance that something shakes free, but kudos to the Brooklyn Nets front office doing right by their player and also probably earning a favor with his agent. It's just the smart way and the classy way to get it done, and that's why Fareed's going to be able to join the Rockets as of Monday night's game. So, as far as why Fareed makes sense for the Rockets, he certainly doesn't fit the description of a rim protector on defense, but he definitely does fit the description of a rim runner on offense. So after losing Clint Capella, that threat of vertical spacing, the lob game, which is essential for James Harden, that's back. And as far as James Harden and Kenneth Fareed, there is history between them. They've got a relationship. They played together on the 2014 Team USA squad. Back then, it's amazing to think that Kenneth Fareed, a guy who has racked up DNP CDs for most of this season, it hasn't even been 5 years since he was a starter on a Team USA alongside James Harden. So they've got a relationship. They play together. Harden has a sense for what it's like to be on the court with him. So as far as the fit with the Rockets, certainly he gives them that lob game, the vertical spacing that Nene doesn't, as far as potentially replacing Clint Capella. Defensively, he's never been a particularly good player. At best case, he's mediocre. Some metrics grade him out below that. But as long as he can at least somewhat hold his own in the switching scheme, then he'll be an upgrade over a 36-year-old Nene and be able to take some of those more athletic matchups like the Bucks that Nene was not really a fit for. So to me, it's clear as long as James Harden signs off on it, because Harden has played with him before, he's practiced a lot, and with this deal getting done for the Rockets, it's clear to me that Harden signed off on it. So there's enough history there that makes me comfortable with how he's going to fit from a locker room perspective, the chemistry with the MVP, those types of things. But even aside from just the temporary need of Clint Capella being out 4 to 6 weeks, he had his thumb surgery, so he won't be back until after the All-Star break in all likelihood. That's 13 more games. Even aside from needing either a starter or someone that plays 25 minutes as far as an additional big, I don't know whether Fareed starts. He could. They might want to bring him off the bench. There's lots of options. It doesn't really matter. Ultimately, there's an easy role for him to play anywhere, 20 to 30 minutes a night. But even aside from that temporary role, the reason that I was high on Fareed, and this goes back to even before Capella went out, it's because all season long, athletic teams have given the Rockets trouble. Even though Nene has been better than expected at 36 years old after beginning his season in early December, he still did not play against the Bucks or the Warriors because they didn't think that he was a matchup. The length, the athleticism, a problem for a guy who's 36. And then if you don't trust Nene athletically, the two bigs who do have the requisite athleticism, Marquese Chriss and Isaiah Hartenstein, well, they have their own issues, very young. And in the case of Chriss, I think it's pretty clear that he's not going to be back after this season, maybe not even after the trade deadline. So they needed another big that they could trust. And ironically, you go beyond just the Bucks and the Warriors, one of the teams that's given the Rockets fits this year is the LA Clippers, led by former Rocket Montrezl Harrell up front. Well, if there's a guy in the entire NBA that I think is the closest thing to a Montrezl Harrell light, that would probably be Kenneth Fareed. So even after Clint Capella gets back, and that'll happen on the other side of the All-Star break, it's still useful, in my opinion, for the Rockets because it lets you mix and match. That's why I was in favor of Fareed over, say, a Robin Lopez type, because with Lopez and Nene, some of the skills are duplicative. You have many of the same traditional mindset. And for the Rockets, it's not so much needing a rim protector that's the issue. It's needing more athleticism, more energy, more hustle. That, to me, is what Kenneth Fareed provides, and it's a different dynamic than a 36-year-old Nene. So you can mix and match even when everybody is healthy. It might be like 2 years ago, if you remember, when the Rockets started Capella and then their backups, Nene and Montrezl Harrell back then, that's when Montrezl was a Rocket, depending on the game, depending on who you went up against, it was a different guy each night. Now, with all of that said, there is some projecting going on here, because the reality is Kenneth Fareed's minutes have dropped substantially the past 2 years, his last season in Denver a year ago. This year in Brooklyn, he's racked up more DNP CDs than he has actual games with minutes played, and a lot of that has to do with circumstances. Brooklyn up front, Jared Allen, we saw him the other night, 20 and 24 against the Rockets. They've also got Ed Davis. They're pretty big up front. That's played a role in his decreasing minutes. But whatever the case, we're projecting that the same version of Kenneth Fareed earlier in his career, when he was a Team USA starter, when he got a $50 million contract, when he was averaging close to 14 points and 9 rebounds per game, were projecting that at 29 years old and after not playing much the past two seasons, that much of that same guy is still in him. That's not a given, but what I'm going to explain on the other side when we look at why the Rockets make sense for Kenneth Faried is why when you actually take a deeper look at Kenneth Faried, you can see a case for optimism that his play warrants more than what his minutes totals have been the last two seasons. So to understand, in my opinion, why the Rockets make sense for Kenneth Faried, you need to understand what's happened to Kenneth Faried, because it's pretty unique. He's just 29 years old, and even this year, he's had some pretty useful games. Within the past month, he put up 21-10 against the aforementioned Milwaukee Bucks in that athletic front line in just 27 minutes. He also had, earlier in January, 13-12 in 29 minutes against the Boston Celtics, another team that's athletic and tough on the front line. And when you watch the highlight packages from those two games within the past month, you can see he's still the athlete that he once was. He's only 29 years old. He's the same age as James Harden, actually a little bit younger. So the manimal, it's still in him. That guy that was just an energetic dynamo for the Nuggets early in his career, got a $50 million contract, got on to Team USA, at one point was seen as Denver's best or close to best player. All the qualities are still there. He's not significantly less athletic. He's got that quick twitch ability. He can finish lobs, which James Harden should give the Rockets a degree of vertical spacing that they've been missing since losing Clint Capella. And even when Capella is healthy, they don't have in the 12 to 15 minutes that he's not playing. So the case for optimism, if you want to buy into this with the Rockets, I don't see, when I look at his skills, now again, he's a mediocre at best defender, but as far as his hustle, how hard he plays, the ability to scrap, good touch around the basket, he's a finisher, which should play better when he's with other creators like James Harden and Chris Paul, so his ability to have nice touch around the basket, get up for the lobs, that should play well than, say, if he's on a bad team. So there's reasons to believe that the 14-9 guy that he was early in his career, when he got the $50 million contracts extension, all of those qualities for a guy who's not even 30, they're still potentially in there. So this could be a deal for the Rockets, just like getting Austin Rivers, that is just taking advantage of just some awkward circumstances and fits elsewhere in the NBA. This could be a real boon for Daryl Morey. That said, to understand why the Rockets make sense for Faried, and I also think why he chose the Rockets and to push the envelope in mid-January, I think it's important to understand why, even with those qualities, he hasn't been playing. And the first bit of it is the evolution of the game around Faried. I don't think that Kenneth has changed that much from the Manimal days a few years ago when he was Denver's starting four, but the NBA as a whole has. We talk about the math problem a lot in Houston the past couple of years. Well, we're seeing fewer math games where Houston has a big advantage because everyone is progressively getting more analytical. You're taking more threes. You're not as boxy as you used to be, to where Faried's athleticism was just so far and beyond the guys he was up against at that position. These days in the NBA, to be a really good power forward, you need to do at least one of two things. You either need to be able to make the defense respect your ability to hit from the perimeter, so you need to have range out to the three-point line. Faried does not. Or you need to be a very good defender. Faried is not. If you're not a good defender and you don't have three-point range, then ultimately, if you're just 6'8", 220 pounds, and you don't provide any distinctive value as far as defense or three-point shooting, in today's NBA, that's probably not going to work, at least when it comes to playing substantial minutes. And as far as where he was in Denver, on top of those issues, the game trending towards more shooting, more defense at that position, the Nuggets ended up getting Paul Millsap on a $90 million contract in 2017, and then Nikola Jokic developed into an MVP candidate at the five spot. So between having an MVP at the five and Paul Millsap on a $90 million deal at the four, the minutes in Denver started to dry up very, very quickly. And in the offseason, Faried was dealt in basically a cash-saving move because it didn't make sense for Denver to have a guy like Faried making nearly $14 million at the end of their bench playing 10, 15 minutes a night. And Brooklyn took him on effectively because they got draft capital for absorbing some money from Denver. But with Brooklyn, there's a lot of young talent up front. We mentioned Jared Allen, Ed Davis, who we saw the other night against the Rockets in that win. Allen had 20 and 24, and it makes it difficult for Faried to get minutes there as well. And to Faried's credit, the Nets coaching staff. They've been very complimentary of his work ethic. But for a Brooklyn team that is near the top of the league in terms of embracing the Moneyball movement, the way the Rockets have, all the threes, all the Daryl Morey principles that we've been talking about, Fareed does not make sense as a four in that dynamic. That's why I've seen the Nets go smaller and smaller to where they've been playing Damari Carroll's small ball lineups with him at the four. Kenneth Fareed in today's NBA, especially for analytics-driven teams like the Nets and the Rockets, needs to be a five. That is what has changed from 4 or 5 years ago. The Fareed at power forward model for most teams, not just a few at this point, most, with how the three-point shot is revolutionizing the game, he needs to be a five. Well, for starters, in Brooklyn, the Nets only traded for him because they got assets for taking on the contracts from Denver and giving them some salary relief, so they didn't really value Fareed, the player, that much to begin with. And then secondly, they've got a lot of depth already with guys like Jared Allen, Ed Davis on the front line. So even though Fareed played hard, he had the right attitude, he just didn't fit. And ultimately, the Nets weren't going to gamble on a guy who's a free agent after this season anyway. This is the last year of his existing 4-year, $50 million contract because they probably weren't going to keep him beyond the year anyway. Of course, they'd rather give playing time to someone like Jared Allen that they see as a part of their long-time future because they have something to gain by continuing to develop him. The other factor that limited Fareed's viability is his contract because we were discussing a moment ago about the fact that in today's NBA, Fareed, even at 6'8", 220, has to be a 5. While he needs to be an undersized 5, to some degree it's a bit of an experiment, like what the Rockets and Clippers have done with Montrezl Harrell to see if it can work. He needs to be a 5, but he's also still making $14 million almost per season, going back to when Denver was paying him to be their starting power forward. So you have to find a team in the NBA that would be willing to pay Kenneth Fareed $14 million for basically what amounts to an experiment. Can he give you enough value offensively at the five to offset the fact that he's undersized and he's never been an especially good defender? So for those wondering, and I've seen it, if Fareed still had value, why hasn't he played the last two seasons? Well, for starters, in Denver, it's the signing of Paul Millsap and the evolution of Nikola Jokic, but in Brooklyn, it's the fact that, and why there weren't other teams trying to trade for him from Denver or Brooklyn, it's a combination of the fact that at this point in his career, he's pretty much a five only with the way the NBA is trending. And on top of that, when you factor in his lofty salary, there's no team that's going to be willing to invest that much money or trade capital to make the math work for a player that's somewhat of an experiment. And that's how a guy who is a perfectly functional and still very athletic NBA big can end up not playing much based on the combination of the evolution of the game and how his contract boxes him in, because it just doesn't make a lot of sense for many teams to take him on, especially in the final year of his deal, if they don't know how it's going to work out. Well, at this point with the Rockets, it's different. The contract is no longer an issue because he's bought out and he's signing for the minimum. In fact, because he signed for the minimum, that preserves what's left of the Rockets' mid-level exception, which is huge, that remaining $3.5 million or so per year, because you could potentially use that to bring Daniel House Jr. back or on other buyout candidates as we get to February. We'll have to see what they get to do with that. And as far as Fareed in particular, in Houston, this is one scheme where they are not afraid to play small. We saw Mike D'Antoni do it 2 years ago with the aforementioned Montrezl Harrell. That was part of his breakout. We've seen him do it the last couple of games with 25, 30 minutes from Gary Clark at the five. If there is one coach going back to the days in Phoenix with Amari Stoudemire and those small ball units that is not afraid to try something revolutionary like Kenneth Fareed in this instance at the five, it is Mike D'Antoni. So in this case, the contract is no longer holding Fareed back, and it's a system in which certainly the next 13 games he'll get a ton of run without Clint Capela. But even beyond that, the Rockets are willing to try him in ways that a lot of other teams might be reluctant to. So that's why, to me, it makes sense for Kenneth Fareed. Certainly now, without Clint Capela, there's an easy path to minutes starting Monday when the Rockets are able to officially add him to the team, hopefully before the Philadelphia game. But beyond that, this is a system where, especially now that he's not on that contract, the Rockets will embrace playing small. They will see how it works out. Offensively, it's a pretty easy fit, I think. Question is, defensively, can he hold his own on switches enough? Not expecting him to be great, but can he at least be functional, more so than the 36-year-old Danae? If so, this is why I think the Rockets appeal to Fareed, and I think that's why ultimately the Rockets see him as a better fit than Robin Lopez or your traditional bigs, because the Rockets are not going to think inside the box. This is a team that is on the cutting edge. It's part of what makes them great. So even if it's a 6'8", 220-pound guy who hasn't played a lot of five in his career, well, this is how the NBA is trending. And while we don't know how it's going to work out, to me, when you dig beneath the numbers, you look at his athleticism and the fact that even though he hasn't been playing that much, he still, to me, looks like the guy he was when he was in peak Manimal form 3, 4, 5 years ago. Yeah, I see a case where I really do believe this can work out. The only question left, beyond just, of course, watching Fareed when he takes the court next week, is how the Rockets create the roster spot to officially add him. More on that momentarily as we close out the program. Finishing up Saturday's Kenneth Fareed-centric episode with the Rockets late Friday night agreeing to a deal after Fareed secured his buyout from the Brooklyn Nets. The timetable, he gets released today, he'll be on waivers for 48 hours, and then he'll clear as of 5 p.m. Eastern Time Monday, which is in just enough time for the Rockets to officially sign him and add him to the roster before Monday night's game against the Philadelphia 76ers, a team with a pretty imposing front line led by Joel Embiid. Rockets also have the Raptors coming up at the end of next week, so playing good teams with big front lines, all while the Rockets are without Clint Capela, it's a pretty daunting challenge for how the roster is put together right now. Fortunately, Kenneth Fareed will be a part of the solution, and for reasons that I've been explaining over the past 20 minutes or so, I think the X's and O's fit is a lot better than you might think at first glance. I'm pretty optimistic about 29-year-old Kenneth Fareed in this system, and perhaps you could even argue that based on not playing that much the past couple of years, he's a young 29. He doesn't have the mileage that you'd think a lot of players might at his age. He's also got, as mentioned in the initial segment, a history of playing with James Harden on Team USA, so there's some existing chemistry there. James Harden knows how he interacts on and off the floor, so if there were any concerns in terms of the locker room fit or anything else, I think James Harden would know, and it sounds like he signed off on this acquisition. Again, the Rockets won't be allowed to comment on it today because Fareed will not officially be a member of the Rockets until Monday, but ultimately, this deal is a matter of when, not if, because even if some other team wanted to claim Kenneth Fareed now that he's on waivers, they can't because no one has close to $14 million in cap room to absorb his existing salary. So he'll sign with the Rockets after, for the minimum, not even taking the mid-level exception. It's a small deal, very little downside, so ultimately, for the Rockets, it makes a lot of sense. The only question that is out there with it, beyond just how and when does Fareed fit with the team, does he start, those types of things, is how the Rockets fit him into their roster, and they have 48 hours left, approximately, to figure that out until about 4 p.m., Houston time on Monday afternoon because they need to get it done at the latest by the tip-off of Monday night's game, which is at 7 o'clock Houston time against the Sixers, so that Fareed will be able to play that night. And when you look at Houston's roster, there are three candidates. There's Marquese Chriss and Carmelo Anthony. Those are two guys that just are not providing much value at all and are on expiring contracts, not going to be in Houston beyond this season. Carmelo hasn't been with them for 2 months now. So you could easily clear a roster spot with one of them, or you also have James Dunnelly, who is in Houston on a 10-day deal. So I think it's easier to want to part with Chris or Carmelo more than Dunnelly, but there are also some drawbacks to that, first and foremost at the trade deadline, and also potentially from a luxury tax standpoint. So according to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, the reports that we've seen on Saturday, the Rockets are trying to trade Carmelo Anthony, but they're not sure they'll be able to do it. And if they aren't, it sounds like that the Rockets would release Dunnelly rather than release Melo. Now, first, why are the Rockets potentially letting go of Melo rather than Chris, especially when you're bringing in another big? The reason is, for starters, positions don't matter because Melo's not with the team anyway. But the reason Chris has more value than Melo is that Chris is making about $3.5 million, Carmelo making about $2.4 million. So as far as potentially matching salaries at the trade deadline, Chris is a more valuable chip than Carmelo because he makes more money. So that's what makes Carmelo more expendable now. The drawback to letting Carmelo go now, well, for starters, you won't have a salary at the trade deadline. Potentially, you could combine Chris and Melo at the trade deadline for about $6 million in expiring salary. That's useful to help match things. But beyond that, if you let Carmelo go by waiving him, then there's a heightened luxury tax impact that comes from that. Whereas if you can trade Carmelo somewhere, even if it's a Michael Carter Williams trade in which you send some cash to get another team to take him and then they do the waiving, ultimately that's advantageous from a luxury tax perspective. And who knows, maybe the Rockets can get a small asset for Carmelo. There have been reports that the past couple of days, Sam Amick of The Athletic now saying that Carmelo feels he has a couple of options and something should happen before the trade deadline. So who knows, maybe even the Rockets can get a very small asset, some sort of protected second round pick, something like that. I think that's the Rockets' plan A. Plan B would be releasing Nunnally, and they have to play it up now. For starters, it's about leverage. If the Rockets say that they're open to waiving Melo, and according to Woj, they've shown no willingness to do that, well, if they say that they're going to waive him, why would someone else trade for him? That's just terrible from a bargaining standpoint. So they have to say that there's another option, no matter what their actual plan is, just because it would crush their leverage if they said that they were going to waive this guy anyway. My personal hope is that it is posturing, because when you look at this roster, let's say the Rockets hypothetically waive Nunnally and use that roster spot on Fareed. Well, at that point, of your 15 slots, Capella, Nene, Fareed, Chris, and Hartenstein, for a team that's had depth issues all season long and is still not healthy now, that would be 5 of your 15 slots occupied by 5s only. That's a problem. And as far as the 3-and-D minutes, many of them previously going to Daniel House, now there's that contract standoff, and Nunnally filled them his first game. Played pretty well, I thought, in Wednesday's loss to Brooklyn. Well, if you lose Nunnally, the only guy left would have to be James Ennis. And to me, Ennis has not quite looked right since coming back from that second hamstring strain. I think maybe there's some fear of truly cutting it loose. Maybe there's some rust. But whatever the case, you would have to feel really good about James Ennis that A, he's healthy, and B, that he is capable of giving you at least 20 to 25 minutes of quality 3-and-D production off the bench for you to let James Nunnally go. Now, I'm not oblivious to the luxury tax angle, but the fact is, on a team where you're already paying, you know, bukus of money for the likes of Chris Paul, Clint Capella, you're supposedly all in on winning a championship in the last of Chris Paul's waning prime years and the last year that James Harden is in his 20s, then ultimately, whatever the small luxury tax hit is from waiving Melo versus waiving Nunnally, who's on a 10-day, so it's a cleaner exit, I don't think it outweighs the need the Rockets have for the 3-and-D skills that Nunnally provides, especially with the double whammy of just having lost Daniel House. Unless you see something, and we'll see what happens tonight against the Lakers, that indicates that James Ennis is ready to step into at least a 25 minutes per game role, and Eric Gordon, you trust that knee to not continue acting up. He had to leave after just 21 minutes in his first game back the other night. Given those headwinds, I would be very disappointed if the Rockets let Nunnally go and instead simply had 5 centers and a roster spot that's still tied up with Carmelo Anthony not even being with the team. So you may as well have 6 roster spots, add in those 5 centers previously mentioned, and then Carmelo Anthony. If you let James Nunnally go in favor of Kenneth Faried, then yeah, you've got 6 of your 15 roster spot. That's 40% with either 5 only players, or in the case of Carmelo, a guy who you've already declared is never going to play for you again. For a team that needs to get every win that can after starting 11-14 and is behind the 8-ball right now in terms of health, they don't have Clint Capella, they still don't have Chris Paul back, I would be disappointed if they let Nunnally go just to save a few more dollars compared to waiving Carmelo Anthony. To me, what I think is happening in the more reasonable scenario and the better one for us as Rockets fans is that the bargaining of eventually trading Carmelo Anthony, they need the leverage of saying that they are not 100% going to move on from him if they're going to extract potentially any value at all. So James Nunnally being on a 10-day, he's the obvious candidate from a math standpoint, but as far as what makes sense for the Rockets and what's in their best interest long-term and in the short-term, just winning games, I don't think that's letting James Nunnally go. They need his skill set right now. So my hope is that that is effectively a leverage play, posturing, whatever you want to call it, and that ultimately by Monday, Carmelo is gone. I don't think it'll be Chris because his salary is a little bigger. They could use that at the deadline. But Carmelo, be it waived, traded directly to a team that might use him like LA or like an MCW thing where they trade some cash to a team that's going to cut him, but then the luxury tax bill is reduced because it's not the Rockets doing the cutting. To me, that's what makes by far the most sense. So hopefully by Monday at 4, that's what happens to secure that roster spot for Kenneth Faried, which the Rockets will need so that he's eligible to play beginning Monday night against the Philadelphia 76ers. Anyway, with that, this will do it for Saturday's show. As always, thank you all so much for tuning in, and please come back tomorrow when we'll have our usual recap of whatever happens on the basketball floor when the Rockets return to play tonight after a couple of days off against the aforementioned LA Lakers. If you want more updates before our next program, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also go to website, LockedOnRockets.com, a Facebook account, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of those are ways you can access our prior content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the program, advertising inquiries, pretty much anything we can do to improve your listening experience as a Rockets fan or even just as a human being. Don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, Spotify, so on and so forth. Please subscribe, leave 5-star reviews. That's how we look attractive to potential advertising clients and keep the business model rolling as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. And beyond just your normal providers, if you have a smart speaker or if you work with a voice assistant provider, just say play podcast Locked On Rockets and you should be able to find our most recent episode that way as well. With those plugs complete, this is where we'll leave off on Saturday, our Kenneth Faried-centric episode breaking down what he will bring to the table once he officially joins the Rockets. We'll see how the roster spot is created, but regardless of how, he will be a Rocket as of Monday night, so stay tuned for that. There's a lot to look forward to in the days ahead. But before Faried even gets here, of course, the Rockets have a game in the interim. That's tonight at Toyota Center against the LA Lakers. Hope to see some of you out there, but regardless, I hope to hear from you tomorrow when we chat about whatever happens right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.